Good, so welcome back everyone, and welcome if you've just arrived for the second half. So yes, this is a very special evening this evening where we have our guest Amrita Jyoti. So this is Amrita Jyoti, I'll introduce her more fully in a moment. My name's Subhadra Matty and I'm a regular here at the Dharma Night class. And all this year so far, we've been doing a seminar series based on this book by Sangharajna, What is the Sangha? So really highly recommended book, and you can buy it as an electronic book. The paper copy is not available at the moment, but you can get it as an electronic book. I really recommend this book. So, and this book is exploring, well, what is the Sangha? The Sangha, of course, being the spiritual community. And interestingly enough, what we've spent most of the time exploring is what it means to be a true individual. So Bhante Sangharaja's kind of coined this this notion of the true individual as something far more than the statistical individual. And yeah, so it's quite interesting, isn't it, that we're talking about the spiritual community, but actually we're spending most of the time talking about, well, what it means to be a true individual. But as we've explored it in this class, I think we've come to see that, well, they're more than connected. They're actually part of the same thing, because the Sangha or spiritual community isn't anything to do with a group. It isn't anything to do with an organisation. It isn't anything to do with a kind of religious structure, in a sense. All it is, I say all, but this is quite a lofty ideal, is a free association of individuals. Or put more simply, all it is communication between individuals. So it just becomes more and more important that we understand more deeply what it means to be an individual, in the sense that Bhante Sangharaja talks about it. And this is what we've been exploring. And there's a whole section in this book entitled The Artist as a True Individual. So that's why we've invited an artist. before I introduce Amrita Jyoti properly, I'll just tell you very, very briefly what Bhante says about the artist and the qualities that Bhante draws out that are kind of in common with the artist and the true individual. So what Bhante says, he says, well, first of all, the artist is more alive, he says, than other people. So here we have a specimen of somebody more alive than other people. And what he means by that, well, he just describes it. I'm sure you've all had this experience. He says, if you go for a walk, say in the country, with an artist, so that might be a visual artist or a poet or a writer, they bring it alive for you, don't they? I mean, I love that, actually, when I'm in the company of someone who's a poet or an artist. They really, it's like these sort of really awaken us. They certainly, you know, I certainly find that for myself. So that's what Bhante means when he says the artist is more alive. Like, to the extent that we are an artist, we're more alive. And he says, well, it's not only that an artist is more aware of the external world, that they're more, their sensibility is more acute. So they're particularly aware of their own responses. And also of something deeper again, the sort of mysterious, magical nature of reality, the sort of mystery of existence. And he says, to the extent that one is a true artist, well, to that extent, one is free from group conditioning. This is something we've talked about a lot, how the true individual is free from just conforming to the group. So this, of course, is the creativity of the artist, the creativity and productivity of the artist. And interestingly, he says, and we explored this quite a lot last week in terms of when we were discussing the true individual, he said, artists are essentially alone. I think, again, what he means by that is, well, to the extent you're an artist, you have to, step beyond the norm. Just step beyond the norm, step beyond convention. So in these ways, Bhante argues in this chapter, and I really recommend reading it, the points of overlap between an artist and a true individual as he defines it. So what we're going to do for the rest of the evening is, I'm going to interview, maybe it's putting it even too formally, I'm going to, hopefully by means of asking a few judicious questions and prompts, explore the world, the life and world of Amita Jyoti, of my friend Amita Jyoti, who's come especially this evening. We've been planning this evening for many months, actually, between us. So this is Amita Jyoti. Amita Jyoti is an artist. You can see just a very small selection of her work here. She studied at Newcastle, and she also did a drawing year to MA level at the Prince of Wales Drawing School. She teaches creativity and imagination and drawing at the City Lit and at
the Contemplative Spirituality Network.
The Contemplative Spirituality Network. And she's been ordained in the Sri Ratna Buddhist Order for 10 years. So, Amita Jyoti. So I'm going to start with the work itself and just ask you about just some of the themes that you've kind of brought to us in your work tonight. So the first theme, so you've got this series on the guardian deity. So there's some sort of lying down here, and then there's some, shall I hold it up or can people see?
Can you hold it up?
Yeah, I wondered if you'd just talk to us about this series.
I did want to just mention something before we go on, just about the text, what Bhante's saying. Yeah. I was just thinking, whilst I think actually that is true, I think actually all those things are drawn out in one through the process of making art or getting involved in art. But I also think that when one starts a spiritual life, those same qualities happen.
Yeah.
So I think, in a sense, you know, it is a common phrase, and we're all artists, but I think, I really think that the Dharma life is a deeply, any true spiritual practice is a deeply creative one. And I think all those things, aloneness, all those things apply to all of us, actually. So I just wanted to say that. What do you want me to say about it? I think when Sir Badri Massey came round to the studio, we met once, didn't we? And we talked in the studio for about an hour or two. And I said, I'm going to bring some guardian deities. And I said, I haven't got much to say about them, but it's just good to have guardian deities around. So these are the beings that sort of protect goodness. I suppose they protect, keep us from falling into darkness, I suppose. So I painted this one after I'd done a week's teaching, and it was very valuable for me to sort of almost reclaim my soul after it. I felt, anyway, I don't want to say too much about that, but can we move on?
Well, can I ask you something? I want to ask you something. Because when you were... So you also said to me you got a bit of a surprise after you painted that painting and then you looked at it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that was interesting, actually. So, this really did come from, you know, I literally felt as though I really needed a guardian deity. Yeah. I really needed that energy that was going to align me with what was true and release the difficulties that I was facing. And so it really did come out of the blue, as it were. I was just painting and, like, just letting my hands move. And, this little figure. So that's its head. That's its body. That's its lotus in the heart. That's its head aura. And this appeared, or I noticed it about a week later or a month later, or someone perhaps pointed it out to me. It's like a little Buddha on the head, which I thought was, that just popped out, you know. So...
I was interested in that because I was just reading earlier that the notion of a guardian deity is very connected with the notion of genius. And genius is, these days we talk about genius as something that we are, but the original meaning is something that actually comes through us.
Right.
So it's a sort of spirit that comes through us. So I thought that was just very interesting in terms of talking to you about your work and inspiration, but also, just this Buddha that... that appeared in the painting. Okay, so, and then, let's move on then to this painting that's laid down as an offering to the Buddha. So this was a commission, wasn't it?
Hold it here. Yeah, this was, this is a print of the original. So the original is, I think it's about life size. And it was two order members commissioned it together. And they wanted to see the Buddha as a human being. And they wanted it to express a few things. Friendship, aging, just the sort of naturalness of aging, but also, illumination within that aging. And something else, I can't remember, but they commissioned this piece, and so I went off on retreat, had a companion with me for the 5 weeks, and painted it. It was an amazing process.
And you said that this very much relates to, you made a little shrine here. Tell us about it?
Yeah.
So what should we
do? So someone said to me, Ubhadradaka said to me, I said, how on earth am I going to do this, a Buddha? And he said, well, you're just going to have to really imagine what the Buddha was like. So I watched this DVD called Brilliant Moon about the teacher Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, who's one of Sangharakshita's teachers. So Sangharakshita, the founder of this movement and order, has got 8 main teachers. And Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, who's here, is one of his 8 main teachers. And there's this amazing, beautiful video of this man's life. I don't know how many of you have seen it. So a few of you, yeah. I really recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's called Brilliant Moon, and it's got live footage of this Rinpoche, this Tibetan practitioner. And so he went over to America. He had American students. Mathieu Ricard was one of his students. And they really felt that he was enlightened. So I just watched this video over and over again. It was about his life story, but it also had live footage of him. So I just watched it over and over again, and then I played the soundtrack whilst I was painting. And, it's forged a very... I just feel, just had so much love and devotion for this being and the video really brings it out. DVD. Yeah.
And when you said you on you that you had a companion, was it Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche?
No, I had there was a person.
You had an actual person yeah. as well.
But well, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. I mean, when you contemplate, you know, when you're in retreat like that for that amount of time, you know, I really did truly feel blessed, you know, just as though blessings were just pouring through. And I think that was because I was just in service. You know, I was just really wanting to, well, it just was the right time. It was the right time to paint it, you know, I'd got a bit of time and... I don't know. I think it comes from the heart.
Yeah.
That heart wish to, I don't know, why not? You know, I that's what I had to say to myself sometimes. It was like, conditions were so positive, and it was like, You know, it was almost like I couldn't be bothered at times. Honestly, it was like... And I had to decide to, what was it? Don't hold back, not for the sake of me. Don't hold back. You know, that was my sense. I couldn't hold back for the sake of me. So it was like I just had, you know, there was no need to hold back from kindness, love, generosity, energy. Yeah. You know, in service.
And how did you feel about the painting when you finished the painting of the Buddha and Ananda?
Well, I knew that it was finished because I knew, well, it'd have to be a completely different painting to take it further. I was pleased with it. And also saw its limitations. You know, I won't tell you what they are. But, you know.
And then the relationship with Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche has, well, it's continued to inspire you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, you know, now, you know, at ordination we take on a sadhana practice, which is a link in, isn't it, to... the transcendental. And my preceptor and I have discussed this, and really this figure, you know, one of Bhante's teachers, now I contemplate him because he was a human being, and for me that's easier. Although all the you know, the green tar, all the deities, the beings of light are also important, but Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche is now, well, I contemplate him, and you know, it's not hard to then feel drawn to grow, I think, or drawn to live by his example, want to become like him.
And then the piece in the middle, you said, is very linked to this piece, is very linked to the Buddha and Ananda painting.
It is. I mean, after I'm going to help you out a bit, because these ones are a bit harder to fathom. You know, these ones are very concrete.
Yeah.
Well, the Buddha and Ananda is, but these ones I think are a bit harder to fathom. So I'm just going to point out that this painting is actually a figurative painting. Things in it, it's not just colours. So that's one head, that's another head, that's a wing, that's a body, that's a body, that's a wing. And there's this kind of, I don't know, a space. And there's this pink light, whatever, pouring down. Can you see it yet? You can see it. So it's called Mysterium Conjunctionis, which is a a Jungian term. Jung wrote a book. This is where my knowledge starts to wane. But he wrote a book. I think it was his last book. Was it his last book? Do you know, Jenny? No, not sure. It's called, anyway, it's Mystical Union. And it's an image of all opposites, masculine, feminine, all the opposites in union. And it's like the inner dimension of that painting. So that painting is about friendship, it's about love. And this one is the same thing, but expressed through colour, really, and shape.
So. And would you like to take us through the whole series and just...
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where I get really nervous.
Are you all with me?
I need to know I'm connected. So where should we start? This one's quite straightforward. That's another version of the same thing, the one just next to it. But it's got a different mood to it. And there's a flame between the two figures. So I won't say much. I'll just say it's the same theme, but a different mood. And then the one at the end, in the middle, I'll probably really have to help you out with this one. The blue one, the blue and white one, and the one at the end are related. So the drawing at the end, which is charcoal and pencil, is a thunderbolt. It's a Vajra. It's a diamond thunderbolt. Whack, which in our tradition is like a thwack of reality. reality coming in a very decisive, immediate, pointed way. And this one on the left, just to the left of it, is, again, it's the same theme, but it's only one figure, and it's the one figure in union with a diamond thunderbolt. So you can probably see a vertical lines coming down. And I kind of was interested to explore how something so crude or so powerful could be described with like that, you know, with sort of incandescent, is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Sort of incandescent, sort of really subtly, something really strong. And the figure there, she it is a female figure on the right, it's always the female on the right for some reason. She's just open, her body's just completely open to this thwack to this light or energy coming down. But that was a process. I mean, you know, I was thwacked. You know, life happens, doesn't it? It's like there's death, there's loss, there's a big change, and they can feel like real thwacks. Thwacks of impermanence. I suppose they're only thwacks because we don't live in accordance with impermanence. If we were to live in accordance with impermanence, we'd probably still feel it as quite intense, but it wouldn't disturb us. But I was disturbed and had to think somehow by articulating it, by entering into the feeling of that, of the effect of that. That shock really it enabled me to release it, I think, or or integrated. And I think that's how art is brilliant, you know, because you have to work with the body and you have to, it helps you to integrate experience.
And then,
so that one is another version of the same thing. That one actually was the hardest one to paint. So that took, I mean, I sort of have been working on it. It's not finished yet, actually, but it's nearly finished, so I thought I'd bring it. And this is where we really get into territory, isn't it? We talked about this, didn't we? So I've got to go there. So it is a female and a male, and they are, this one's verging on the erotic, you know, they are conjoined, there is a sort of vagina or something underneath at the bottom, and it was a contemplation really of desire and a contemplation of what's acceptable really in terms of the spiritual life. You know, I have grown up really as a Buddhist and felt very much that sexuality, I think most religion, a lot of religions have a problem with sexuality. And I have questioned its value and questioned, well, why would you want to spend time doing that when you've got, when there's other things that are more important. But somehow this is a, what's the word, redemption? This is like an integration of, I think we have to really be sexual animals. You know, I think that's where, I don't mean we have to act it out, but I think we have to, well, I've been very inspired by Subhuti and Padmavadra's talks on Eros and beauty. And again, if you haven't heard those, and if you're curious about the where desire and, you know, almost arousal comes into the spiritual life, then I really recommend those talks that are on Free Buddhist Audio. So we have to dress it. I mean, that's where loads of energy is. So these paintings really were inspired by those talks on Eros and beauty. I was asking myself, what do I really desire? What do I really want? And trying to open to that energy in order to understand it and to contemplate if that will give me what I really want, and release the energy, really, ideally. But yeah, that was my purpose. That was my purpose. And it's been amazing to do that. And quite a safe place to do it. I recommend doing it through painting rather than.
So tell us about, so when you say it's been amazing, what's been amazing about it? Like, what have you, would you say it's like deepened your understanding, expanded it? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. As a contemplation of desire, I suppose, you know, I've written about these paintings. They're all about the beloved, they're all about love. So, on one level, they're a devotion to this teacher. They're all sort of in that context. It's about becoming closer to being like him, and so, you know, so, but, you know, they're also about coming from where I am at, working from the ground up, and you know, asking the question of, what do I really want? And well, So I started to, you know, I was listening to these lectures on Eros and the Beloved, Eros and Beauty. And, you know, my mind just so much goes to, you know, just distracts itself going to the, you know, the lover, wanting the lover, you know, the ideal lover. It's just like, anyway, that's my fate. That's my, not fate, but... And I'm aware, I'm very aware that I'm not alone in this, you know, because I was looking through history, the history of art and the history of culture, and just the, you know, if you look at Christian mystical tradition, they talk about union with God. They're talking about union. We want, I think we want union with something, whether it's like an ego to bolster her up or whatever it is. And this is where I become quite inarticulate, but anyway... They talk about mystical union with God. So much art. So I was looking at The Divine Comedy by Dante, and that's about union again. And if you look at the Buddhist tradition, you have the double Vajra, which is all about union, and the Vajra, which is all about union. Union is opposites, good and evil. And where do we stand? Within that, do we want to keep going after the good and denying the evil in ourselves? You know, so I think for me, this has been about finding a union, a unity within opposites. And so I'm trying to bring it back down again. So in terms of desire, I think what I was doing was having two figures, so male and female. You know, already you've got a dichotomy to reflect on. Very interesting one, very compelling one. And in the painting process, it's just painting, but outside of painting, it's a contemplation of... whatever I desire, whatever I have desired over the last 10 years, I've been contemplating this, to really bring that into relationship to the three Lakshanas, impermanence, insubstantiality, and unsatisfactoriness of conditioned existence. So if everything's impermanent, then actually, you know, whatever we try and grasp hold of, it's not going to do it, is it? So looking at desire, but then like bringing almost that desire into relationship then with the three Lakshanas and letting it letting it penetrate in. And then I've been listening to a talk by, again, in this series, by Spooty on... the erotic force. So this is all about the erotic force. He's talking about beauty and how we need beauty in the spiritual life. And he's asking us in this talk, the same series, Eros and Beauty, to look at our desire. And he's saying not only is reality pressing on us all the time in terms of the three Lakshanas, impermanence, insubstantiality, and dukkha. But it's also pressing on us in terms of the three vimokshamukhas, which are the three liberations. So these are, you know, if one can really allow life to be impermanent and kind of nestle in with that a bit, you know, you know, like, I think, appreciate it with the body and the heart, then I think, I mean, my experience has been that I've been opening more and more to bliss and beauty, a freedom that is... You know, as Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche has said, no one can take that away from you. He said, go into retreat. No one, you know, rely on this. No one can take that away from you. which is remarkable. So it's boosted my faith.
There's a freedom, even when you speak, you can sense the possibility of freedom. How about this one, Amitadhyoti, this huge thing?
Okay, so that one, that one's called Last Breaths. And I was working with this whole thing of duality, so, you know, extending from this sort of very basic desire to contemplating duality. And I thought, what would it be like working on two canvases? You know, working with two rather than one. And then I was doing printing, so I was sort of had one canvas and then I'd place the other one on top and then peel it back, and then you've got two things that are the same. And this was painted, I had the luxury of working in a huge room for a week, and it's called Last Breaths. And I realised, oh, it looks a bit like lungs, you know, like lungs. And then I found out, as I was painting it, that a friend of a friend was dying. She was actually dying of lung cancer. And I was asked to pray for her, or to, she's a Buddhist. As my preceptor asked me to bear her in mind, you know, to sort of hold her in my heart. She was asking all her preceptees, you know, it wasn't my preceptor who was dying, it was a friend of hers. So I did that. And so really this was, it was quite painful actually, because my lungs started going really hurting as I was painting it. And I just thought, I've just got to completely surrender. I don't know, I sort of didn't know what was going on. And I just thought, I've just got to completely place all my trust in Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche and just let go and just pray for this woman, for her well-being. And it was, I mean, it sort of broke me apart in a way. You know, it was sort of really upsetting, but really beautiful at the same time. So Last Breaths, and she actually died on the last day that I was painting it. So it's sort of, I wasn't sure whether to bring it, but I think, you know, just synchronicity, that I had time at that time, and it's quite a beautiful experience, but felt very stirred up for about 3 days afterwards. And I think that's what I've realised. It's the same thing as like being on retreat. You know, if you do a painting that's sort of going to turn you inside out a bit, it's like giving birth, you know, it's like the mother and the child, and they have to stay in hospital for a while just sort of to get over it. And I think when we come back off retreat, we have to do that a bit.
Might give ourselves time to absorb it.
Because your brain, your mind can't make sense of it, can it? It's sort of, you know.
Interesting.
But the heart can. The heart can. The heart sort of, it can, I think it can handle so much, you know, if we just keep resting in the heart.
Is that what you mean when you say surrender?
Surrender into the heart. And surrender any worrying, really. Yeah, just surrendering down into the body and into the heart. Yeah, I think so.
What about this? I didn't see this little figure before when I was in your studio.
Do you want to hold it up? Well, it's life drawing. And I've got some other drawings that I'd like to show you, if I may. A friend of mine and me have decided, I don't know whether she's keeping up for it, but I am. We went to see an exhibition of paintings at, I can't remember remember where it was, and there was a Picasso there, and the Picasso was it was crazy. It was like this crazy figure who was half red. The bottom half of his body was a triangle. His eyes were like this. And I just thought it was brilliant. You know, I just thought, wow. So we were laughing and had this idea to, every week, one day, every week, to let a being come into being. So this is play. This is just pure play. No, stylistically, it can be any style. So, you know, we all have our style. So it's just like you just do whatever you want. So we're inviting, each of us are inviting for the next year. So 52 beings will come into being, so one a week. So this is my first one. And it actually looks like somebody in the audience. So this is just, I mean, you've got to have fun, haven't you, in life. So that was the first one. She hasn't got a name yet. Perhaps yellow young woman or something. I don't know. Someone will think of the title. Maybe you can think of the title. So she just popped out. And then this came out. So there's two figures there. One of them's pointing at a moon. And then these are, I don't know what they are really. So it just feels like pure delight to do this, you know. Mm. Just inviting once a week, one being a week for the next 52 weeks. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there any more painters you want to show us? Or?
I suppose I would. I wouldn't mind. Would you be willing to pass those? There's two of them, kind of on the floor there. Yeah.
Oops.
You've got much more to say.
Well, then I want to ask you a few more things.
Yeah, okay. Well, I suppose I've just got this sort of aspiration, I suppose, to work in this sort of style or work with this kind of thing, but do Buddhas as well. So these aren't finished, but I just wanted to show you these as two sort of recent things. So neither of them are finished. Mm. There's a Amitabha there, and there's a Pranayaparamita here. So these are just sort of exploring painting techniques, really. Mm. So sort of the way I want to go, you know, the way I'd like to go is to be exploring, working with this kind of light, quality of light. Doing Buddhas as well.
So what's a day in the life of Amitabha Joshi like?
Is this time? Is this time for the music?
I don't know.
I think it is. Shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. So, so life can be tiresome. Boring in the studio, so you have to make I'm not going to be dramatic and silly. To arrive in the studio and just sort of settle a bit after the journey and then sort of establish the intention, you know, which is to let what is it subhadrati to let whatever I do be guided by my teacher, you know, by my teacher's teacher, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. So to really, so to set up a ritual space, 4 candles around the studio, set up a ritual space, a sort of protected space, and then to sort of just set simple intention to be of service, you know, to orientate myself from the heart, from the body, to be authentic and to do my best. And sometimes I feel scared or blocked or a bit serious. I think I tend towards seriousness. So I have to lighten myself up a bit. So I often play music. So I'm going to play you a little song. And what you can imagine is, I'll play you the first part of this song. What you can imagine is, this is Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche asking us this question, okay? Asking the question. Only the first line of the thing. Anyway, here we go. So I dance in front of Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. This doesn't happen every day.
Do you wanna dance under the moonlight? Squeeze me all through the night. Oh baby, do you wanna dance? Do you wanna dance and hold my hand? Tell me I'm your lover man.
And in addition to that, I've got some very, very serious mantras. So there's some wonderful mantras on Spotify that really can be background music, just to Avalokiteshvara mantra, very strong Tibetan, beautiful guardian mantras, other things to sort of just help keep light, I suppose, and to help enjoyment and help to orientate towards love.
I'm really interested in that myself, just that whole, we said earlier on your solitary retreat, you might not always immediately feel like doing the work, but it sounds like you really create the conditions for it to be drawn out of you by these rituals you do.
Yeah.
Is that what it feels like?
Yeah. Sort of softening the heart and opening the heart and encouraging myself that it's a good thing, you know, and why not? But also, I think it is worth saying, or bearing in mind, I was talking with some friends in the break, that by opening to the beautiful or the, you know, to compassion, really does require some soul work, you know, some, like I remember painting, I was commissioned to paint a Padmasambhava painting. If any of you know, I've always been very scared of Padmasambhava because he's very direct and very full on, really. You know, it's bright red. I've always been scared of red until I painted this painting. But what it brought up was, you know, in order to paint that, I had to transform a lot, actually, internally. And I still feel as though I haven't created a good painting for that person. So I said, well, here's, you know, my first painting, and I'll do you another one, you know, when I'm, well, I feel ready for it now. I'm glad to say I love the colour red now. But I had to transform a lot of, I had to find my relationship to anger, you know, and I had a load of health problems kind of burst into being. And it was because of this painting, I think, because it was confronting me with a reality. And, you know, I had to let go of old habits, conditioning, things that I was attached to, in order to really receive the wisdom and the love, really, of that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is, you know, these are very light paintings. These are all very light. There's a whole series of paintings that are also, I mean, like the Guardians, they're dark, you know, they're dark, they're about transformation. And this one is very visceral. And I felt like as I was painting this, it was like energetically releasing trauma, you know, from the past. And so I think it's quite healthy to sort of have a dialogue between our conditioned being, you know, the fact that we're not enlightened and we've got habits, you know, I've got habits, and you know, to have both going on at the same time, sort of like an opening out to the beautiful and like a penetration of the beautiful or the lovely or the desired, but also really the reality that does have quite an effect on the body and on the heart and on the mind, and that needs a lot of care, I think, to unravel and you know, to heal, really. And I think that's just where metta comes in. I don't think the spiritual path has to be hard or difficult at all. I think it can be painful. Life is painful, has painful aspects to it. But I think when there's metta there, I think, or loving kindness, then I think you're kind of born in something. You're held. We're held, aren't we? Would you say? Something like that. You sort of, so you don't need to hold back.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about kind of connects with what I was saying at the beginning. So you've got this, well, vision of the Sangha or spiritual community, but then this emphasis on the individual. And then I was thinking, like, I know because you're an order member as well as my friend, that you are committed to, well, the Bodhisattva ideal, to the ideal of, well, the Dharma for the benefit of all beings. And, well, then there's this, well, there's the image of the artist sort of in her studio working alone, the sort of aloneness. How do you think about those, you know, those things? Is that a kind of is that a paradox for you, the sort of aloneness of the artist on the Bodhisattva ideal, the Sangha?
And I think there's a couple of things there. So when I remember when I was, it's changed a lot over the years. So when I was first painting, I just thought I couldn't reconcile it at all. You know, how is this an expression of the Bodhisattva ideal? Just could not reconcile it. But I just knew that, I just really felt that I was doing what I needed to do. So I just trusted that. And I actually prayed every day. I keep saying pray. I don't mind pray. I wished with my heart that what I was doing would benefit others, and I had no idea how that would happen. But I just sort of thought, well, this is the only way, because it's not obvious at all. Just really hope that it will, and follow what feels right. So I think it's a trusting. Now, it is interesting. I'm trying, you know, in my life generally to put myself under the influence of this great teacher, and he represents the bodhicitta for me, or the generous life, you know, very much the generosity. I teach art, so I help other people to access their imagination and to enter into the symbolic world, and to find nourishment and find guidance, you know, from what they find there. So that, I feel like that is sort of actively helping people. When I'm doing commissions, I'm actually thinking of the people, you know, so I'm trying to bring my feeling and my sensibility, empathy, into relationship with their vision. So I'm very much working for them. You know, so that's doing something for other people. When I'm doing this work, I think it's more like just... if people like them and enjoy them, then that pleases me, if it means something to them. I don't think I'd spend my life doing work just like this. You know, I feel very drawn to doing the commissions and the teaching as well. But this is... I think it's like going on a long retreat or something, or going on retreat. You go there and you transform your mind, and you come back and you can then relate to people, I suppose. I'm not sure.
It was interesting you said that, with a lot of feeling, I have to do this work.
This work?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because this is the... It's where I encounter complete openness. And it's where I encounter, you know, what I'm trying to help other people do. And in a way, what we're all... you know, if you're doing this, I don't know who's here tonight, but when we open to the unknown, we have to be open, you know, to really have a dialogue with something that is greater, or something that speaks to the heart. So I have to, in order to teach people how to do it, I have to be doing it.
Wow, thank you. Okay. I think we're probably going to have to end that. I'm just really I feel kind of spellbound by our evening, of talking to you and hearing you speak, and you're just very, very enriched, you know, by seeing your work, by hearing you talk about it. And I think, well, I hope we all do, and I think just as you said in the beginning, like, this path of creativity, whether we're literally an artist or not, and that's the... if we're living the Dharma life, we're living the life of creativity, that we ourselves, as Bhante said, are our own works of art. And I just think, you know, the way you've talked about how you plumb the depths, how you how you create the conditions, you know, for something to be drawn out of you that's more than you. How every now and then a Buddha appears as a fun magic. Just like absolutely, you know, absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I just really want to thank you for, you know, going to, you know, just going to the trouble in a way of bringing your work here to show us as well. I know you put a lot of effort into just even physically bringing it all here, but then of course bringing yourself here. And just to say, before we end, that Amita Joshi, Amita Joshi's prints of her work are always for sale here at the Buddha Centre, so they're for sale here tonight. And Amita Joshi also does do commissions of Buddhist art, and she's got this great scheme of affordable art where you can sort of pay a little bit, you know, regularly, and then have a whole painting. So if you want to talk to her about any of those things, she'll be around at the end of the class. But I just really, you know, want to say thank you, and sort of on behalf of us all, really thank you for a very, very spellbinding, enriching evening. So thank you very much, Amita Joshi.